my name is Monty Rowland. I'm with Monty Design in Morrisville, North Carolina. I'm also the president of Monty Gear, manufacturer of outdoor and sporting equipment and slingshots. I wanted to spend a little bit of time today talking about what I'm going to describe as the return of the maker. One of the things that really kind of disappeared from our cultural landscape and cultural fabric was shop. If you grew up previous to 1960, maybe 1970, you know, you're in high school in the 60s, the 50s, the 40s, there's a pretty good chance that you took a shop class. There's also a pretty good chance that your dad or your neighbor had a drill press, had an air compressor, had these tools that allowed you to build or fix or repair or modify devices in your home. So there was this skill set of how to do what we very technically call stuff. So your grandfather probably knew how to fix his lawnmower. Your dad probably did, but you may not. So there were some skills that were lost. And along with that, there was also this ability and this drive to make stuff you needed. So for example, right now, it's really easy to buy a lot of the stuff you need to fix your house or what have you from Home Depot or Lowe's. So let's say that you need a new door for your closet. You're probably going to go buy that door. Your grandfather might have made that door. Now, without being too I don't want to be critical with this as much as I'm just pointing out some changes and then also some changes that are now occurring, counter changes that are now occurring. So your grandfather or your father, they had tools. They had some scrap wood from other projects. They had sources of wood. And so they could make that door. I remember in Boy Scouts, Mr. Lawler was working on a door. It was a Venetian type door that allowed air to pass through for a cabinet. I think choir robes or something were stored in there, but at the United Methodist Church. And so that's where our Boy Scout troop met. So we got there for our meeting and he was installing a door. Well, in talking to him, it turns out he made that door. When I looked at that door, you know, I'm 13. I figured it was complex enough and it was a nice enough job that he bought that door. But no, he made it. So in this case, he gave of his time and his skills and probably some scrap wood or from around his shop to make this really beautiful door. Now, I'm a mechanical engineer. I didn't grow up doing this. I didn't grow up making doors. Now, in my dad's defense, I probably could have. I was way too interested in the computer and other stuff and racing cars. And so part of the reason I didn't do that is a lot of it was decisions I personally made. Because I think my dad would have supported that if I'd been more interested in some of the things he knew. Wasn't until later in life that I've gotten more interested in those things. So for me, I was interested in what the computer could do. My dad, he was more interested in what he could do with a hammer and a saw when he was growing up. This is where he grew up. It was more important. So there was this change in about 50 years in the U.S., really across 1.5 generations, that the computer became something that we wanted to figure out what we could do with a computer, not what we could do with a hammer. we lost something when we did that. Because all of a sudden, we lost self-reliance. Can't make your own door. Don't have your own tools. Got to rely on somebody else. Buy it cheap from China or cheap from Brazil. So we definitely lost something. But I think what's happening now is that the folks like me that wanted to see what we could do with a computer are now realizing that we can do an awful lot when we combine the computer with things like CNC, rapid prototyping. And I'm in this industry, so, you know, it's a, you know, I'm kind of already immersed in it. But at the same time, even from my personal viewpoint, over the past few years, we've gotten, as a company, have obtained more capability to do more and more making stuff and less farming out. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But part of that is just because of an awareness of, hey, let's do it in-house. We can serve our clients better because we can keep the cost down. And that's a valuable thing. So there's this hybrid now of CNC machining and rapid prototyping. And I know everybody is so tired of hearing about how rapid prototyping is going to be making parts for everything in the world in 2 weeks. And that ain't happening. Rapid prototyping machines have come great strides. We can do materials we could never do before. Are they going to replace the average factory tomorrow? No. Are they already displacing parts? Absolutely. There are some very complex, for example, car parts that are expensive to tool, low volume, that they're now making on rapid prototyping machines, especially SLS or selective laser sintering. So there may be a part in your car that's this complicated plenum that is rapid prototype. Tooling was ridiculously expensive to create, so the cost of rapid prototyping justifies the cost of the part. And that's where that first manufacturing entry is. On the same time, there's on the lower end of this, there's now CNC machines that are very inexpensive, a few thousand bucks, and there's 3D printers that are actually getting pretty good for $1,500 to $3,000. And sure, they're not as good as the rapid prototyping you get from a service bureau off an SLA or an SLS or a Z Corp printer, but they're getting enough to the point where they're useful in making things. And so at that point, we've now in some ways democratized the 3D printer. And a good example of this is that now with a 3D printer, not a low-end one yet, but a higher-end one, so maybe a $60,000 printer or $40,000 printer, you can actually make a single-use firearm. And that's a game-changer in so many ways. So what's going to happen, I believe, is that a couple of things are moving forward. One is that as the cost of rapid prototyping comes down, rapid prototyping is becoming a bigger part of the product development process. Because now we can make rapid prototypes that we may actually be able to field in beta units or proof of concepts, or that before the technology wasn't there for a usable part. It's also making inroads, as we discussed, in some of these specialty areas, automotive, aviation, spacecraft. So the next step is to think about what's happening in the garage. Because now, for let's say $5,000, I can buy software, a small CNC machine that'll cut small parts, and a 3D printer. And that software is, you know, some lower end 3D modeling software, in some cases maybe even free, and software that helps me translate my 3D files into something that I can either machine or I can run through my 3D printer. So for a relatively small investment, and when I say relatively small, $5,000 is a lot of money, but when you think about it as a hobby, there are a lot of hobbies where, you know, we'll plomp down $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 because it's something we enjoy doing. So there's this hobbyist, and we're going to call them makers. In the past, these makers did a lot of innovation, came up with a lot of great ideas. I mean, back to Apple. And these guys just rocked in so many areas. But, you know, they developed a personal computer in their garage. And so think about the impact that has. So when you see someone who's tinkering with something in their garage, never forget that 20 years from now, that person might be sitting in California in a really nice building. So these makers now have these tools that are very capable and reasonably inexpensive and can start producing parts and start designing things that they want to design. And a lot of times the best designs are the ones that solve a simple problem in a simple way. And so if you're a maker and you have, I don't know, you need a handle for your compost bin, well, now instead of going to Home Depot, maybe you print it and bolt it on. So when someone has that kind of freedom and liberty to create products, then all of a sudden, you never know what they're going to come up with and how that can benefit the economy. Because some percentage of the makers are just going to make a few things and be happy with that. Some percentage are going to make a few and sell a few, and some percentage are going to make a lot and sell a lot and build companies that employ people. So nothing wrong with being a maker. That's a great place to start. It's like going to the gym when you're fat and scrawny. Excuse me, that didn't make sense. When you're fat and don't have much muscle, you're just fat. You go to the gym and feel like everybody's looking at you weird. Well, everybody there started somewhere. And so it may be that after you've been working out at the gym for a while, all of a sudden you're starting to bulk up a little bit and getting some definition and losing some weight. And so the next person who comes in that's fat and out of shape feels out of place. But really, they're just where you were a while back. And I think when you look at makers, it's the same way. There's different levels of, I'll say, commitment and resources spent and time spent. But at the same time, this whole the value of makers in our society has been rising quickly, and that's a very, very wonderful thing. You look at places where people make products, and those affinity groups of makers are starting to lead to companies that cater to those. For example, Tech Shop is a good example. Tech Shop is where you pay a fee and you end up having access to equipment and training and classes that allows you to, as a group, leverage this equipment you couldn't afford on your own. And so that's a way that there's this infrastructure that's grown up to support the makers. And as there are more makers, you'll start to see more vendors on all different levels. There's a lot of materials that are hard to buy right now that you used to be able to buy commonly at the hobby store or the hardware store. But since those materials aren't used as much, for example, go buy a piece of 1-inch brass rod. You're probably not going to buy that as a consumer without ordering it from a company that sells products to other businesses. So I think that as the rise of the maker occurs, we're also going to see the rise of the maker vendor, which helps build the entire infrastructure and makes it even easier to make new products, new designs. And I think that's absolutely wonderful. So if you are a maker, all right, you're doing the right thing. Make some stuff, design some things. And if you all you do is design stuff for your own pleasure, that's a good thing, and that helps everybody, because sooner or later you're going to teach somebody else how to make things. You're going to be an example. And that person is going to teach somebody. And some percentage of those folks are going to teach classes or start companies or buy maker stuff, which is going to help that industry grow. Not for the sake of the growth of the industry, but for the sake of having available what you need to be a maker. Which is going to keep going. 3D printing is going to become less expensive, more capability, bigger volumes. CNC, some extent, do the same thing. More capability, software gets better, less expensive. And the materials are more commonly available. So as this grows, it's good for the economy in the long run. It's not something the government did. It's something that a guy or a gal in their garage did, and they taught. So if you're a maker, please teach. Teach other people. Give them the passion. Give them the fire. Teach the kids so that they grow up making things. Keep it safe. You know, we don't want to lose any fingers in the saw, but same time, want to teach. So that's my thoughts for today. I hope this was beneficial. If you have any thoughts, comments, good or bad, it's Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E, at Monty, M-O-N-T-I-E.com, or visit our website, www.monty.com. Hope you have a great day. Monty Rowland, signing off.